We're going to have a debate on immigration. Are Mexican immigrants a strength or weakness to America? We're going to be hearing from Jared Taylor, who's editor of American Renaissance and president of the New Century Foundation, and also Jose Rivera, president of Yale University, his Hispanic student organization. And both of these men join me now here on News Talk 800 WVHU. First off, good morning, Mr. Taylor. How are you doing, sir?
I'm very well, thank you. Good morning to you.
All right, thank you for coming on. Did we lose Mr. Rivera? Okay, we lost Mr. Rivera, so just that's okay. That'll give us an opportunity to allow you to take about a minute or so here, Jared, to give us some opening statements.
Certainly. I think you can make some strong arguments for the view that Mexico is precisely the wrong place, the worst place from which we should be getting immigrants. That sounds like a rather strong statement, but the fact is that on practically any social measure, whether it's crime rates, disease rates, school dropout rates, poverty rates, welfare use rates, Mexicans are clearly well behind the majority white population, and in that sense are not a good addition to the country. At the same time, Mexico is the only nation in the world in which a large percentage of the population have actual territorial claims, at least emotionally, on the United States. 58% of Mexicans will tell a pollster that they believe the southwestern part of the United States belongs to them. We already have about 30 million people of Mexican origin in the United States. They have their own local loyalty that is not part of the United States at large. And there is practically no index that you can point to by which Mexicans are a desirable rather than an undesirable addition to the United States.
All right. And Jared Taylor also has a website, amren.com, amren.com. And now we bring in Jose Rivera, who again is president of Yale University's Hispanic Student Organization, and an organization that believes that there's a mythical place in which the Southwest U.S. will be made into an all-Mexican area and renamed the Bronze Continent. Is that what you believe, Mr. Rivera?
Well, no, that's somewhat of a misstatement. I'm sorry, I missed some of Mr. Taylor's comments because I got disconnected earlier.
I apologize for that. Go ahead.
That's fine. Actually, that is part of our Constitution as a document during the 1960s in which we were born to help Mexican-American students succeed in schools and high schools and help these exact rates that, admittingly, Mexican-Americans perform less well in schools and things like that. Mostly because of environmental factors in a lot of these areas due to less income, and during the 60s specifically, and still to some degree today because of racial inequities, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the main focus of my group is for. The use of such terms as Aztlan, Bronze Continent, and things like that were for use for a common historical narrative in order to strengthen ourselves culturally in order to be able to express ourselves politically. So the idea is that that's a political goal. There was never, ever consideration within the organization that there should be separation or anything like that. There was a willingness to work within the American political institutions. So it's that quote in there is quite often mistaken, but
well,
mostly in order.
The reason that I bring up that quote is, number one, it was on your bio. Number two, it was also just said by Mr. Taylor that many Mexicans have an emotional tie that would lead them to believe that they still have ownership of parts of Southwest America. Is that true?
Well, Mexican Americans rightly should believe that they have ownership or partial ownership over Southwestern America as the rest of America, because they are Americans and they own America, a part of America, just as every other U.S. citizen does. So, I mean, that's kind of a misleading question to ask someone in a poll or anything like that, because, I mean, you're going to get people saying, well, like, okay, I am a citizen or I am living here. I do take part in this society. I do take ownership in this society, which is, I think, a desirable candidate for like, someone who's part of our country.
All right.
It's never exercised within any rational or really solidified base of Hispanics in the United States that there's a belief that there should be any sort of separation, or that there's a belief that that they shouldn't mix educationally or have integration with other people in any sort of arena among Mexican Americans. They are Mexican Americans work hard. This country is founded on immigrants. Several times in the history of the United States, people have fought up against immigrants. I mean, Germans and Japanese were put in internment camps. I mean, there's nothing quite that serious going on today or that explicit. But the fact is that there are a lot of reactions against immigration. But I don't think Mexican Americans ever have that belief that that we want to take back any part of the country anymore. We just want ownership in this society,
all right,
just like everybody else.
Do you think, Mr. Taylor, that there is more to that?
Oh, there's considerably more to that. First of all, the people that I was talking about earlier that lay claim to the southwestern part of the United States are Mexicans living in Mexico. 58% of them say that the Southwest belongs to them. 57% of Mexicans living in Mexico will tell you that they have an absolute right to cross the American border anytime they feel like it. At the same time, Hispanics living in the United States who are citizens of the United States, only 33% consider themselves first and foremost American. The rest either consider themselves Hispanic first or foremost or their previous nationality, whether it was Mexican or Honduran or Venezuelan, whatever it was. This is a sentiment that other Americans find extremely disturbing. I think also for Mr. Rivera to backpedal from this notion of Aztlan to pretend that, oh, we're just interested in integrating, I think that's very misleading. His organization, Mecha, has never denounced this plan of Aztlan. They have never repudiated those documents. I would remind you also that the symbol of Mecha is an eagle. It's a flying spread eagle. In one talon, he has a stick of dynamite. In the other talon, he has a traditional Central American war hatchet. This is not a particularly peacefully minded group. Certainly, its origins are not peacefully minded. And in any case, even to talk about in terms of Aztlan as sort of a historical idea that gives us identity, to what purpose does it give you identity? It gives identity of a separatist, of a distinctly un-American, even anti-American kind. So that kind of backpedaling in public is very unconvincing.
All right, we're talking with Jared Taylor and Jose Rivera. Mr. Taylor, again, editor of American Renaissance, president of New Century Foundation. Mr. Rivera, president of Yale University's Hispanic Student Organization. And we'll take a break and come back and continue the debate on Mexican immigration here in just a moment on the Tom Roten Morning Show, 818. This is News Talk 800 WVHU. I need to get something straightened out here because, I think we're getting there. But, Mr. Rivera, are you for or against the Bush immigration reform bill that died in the Senate?
Okay. All right. Well, first, I just want to comment to the earlier comments that were stated. I just want to make sure that we know here that I am not speaking on behalf of my organization for reasons internal. However, I am speaking from my own personal opinion.
That's fine.
Just in case I was misunderstood. I also, on the immigration bill, I'd like to get to that. I was against the bill, but I was for the main motivations behind it. I think there was a lot of good ideas that were put into it, earned legalization ideas such as that. However, I do think a few of the measures were overly draconian. And a lot of them really would have ended up hurting the United States economically and culturally.
So you were for some sort of a guest worker program?
I was for some sort of a guest worker program, and okay. I was also for a path to earned legalization. However, I think that needed to be possible in scope, whereas the one that was crafted by the Congress and influenced by the president was not possible in scope.
All right, and now, Mr. Taylor, your opinion of the Bush immigration reform bill that a lot of conservatives call just amnesty.
Well, like the thousands, even billions of people who telephoned the Senate and sent email messages. I'm opposed to any procedure whereby lawbreakers, illegal immigrants, are granted citizenship or a path to citizenship ahead of those who are willing to abide by the law. I think most Americans find that utterly preposterous, and Bush is going to be in trouble with people who might ordinarily be his supporters on account of that. However, I'm a little curious as to why Mr. Rivera is not willing to speak for his organization. There are 400 chapters, at least, of the Mexican student Aztlan movement all across the United States. I think it's important to know what they think. And what they think is, as you mentioned previously, Mr. Oden, is that they see the United States as something that, at least the southwestern portion, belongs to them. They have some sort of territorial and historical right for it. I wish he would speak for the organization rather than for his own views.
Is there anybody, Mr. Rivera, that does speak for your organization? I mean, after all, you are the president of the Yale University Hispanic Student Organization. It's MECA or MECA, is that right?
It's MECA. And the reason I cannot speak deliberately and purposefully for the organization as a whole is because it is a very large organization based in very many schools, and I can't possibly consult each one of them.
Can you just speak for the one at Yale University?
At Yale University, I'd be happy to speak for my tenure here as president at Yale University. This is what my MECA stands for. Yeah, absolutely, the one that I am moderating. However, I can't speak for all different segments. However, the messages that I'm saying are essentially the same that you're going to get all across the country. That there's not a separatist organization, and despite, you know, many symbols and things like that might be in our flag or things such as that, there are symbols in all sorts of flags that could be construed as violent or anything like that. The important thing is look at the history of what MECA has done. It's never advocated any sort of separatism. It's always advocated progressive agendas for education, focused on getting more Hispanics into higher education, which I think is a very very good thing. We want more educated people out there, and it's always been in charge of new ideas that are beneficial for America. MECA was one of the first people to support AIDS advocacy. A lot of these ideas MECA really got behind. So never in its history has it ever.
Well, you talking about getting behind? You get behind government spending money on AIDS research or something?
Actually, during the 1980s, it was one of the organizations that had an institution in place that through which they supported the government putting money towards AIDS research on the ground floor, right when AIDS really needed the research for it.
So, government funding.
There's a lot of things in MECA's history that show that.
You're talking about government funding?
Yeah, government funding for AIDS research.
Okay, now let me get back to something here, Mr. Taylor, Mr. Rivera. I had a caller last hour whose father immigrated here legally from Germany. I believe he said right before the coming Nazi regime, and that they could see that was coming, and that's one of the reasons why his family wanted to come to the U.S., and he came here the right way, the legal way. The first thing you wanted to do was learn the language and get integrated into the society and get a job, an honest-paying job. And this man, who is the son of that legal immigrant, calls himself an American. He didn't call himself a German-American. He calls himself an American. He spoke English just like the three of us do. Let me ask you, Mr. Taylor, why is it that there's some people, as you mentioned, who don't see themselves as Americans first, whether they be here legally or illegally?
In the case of Mexicans, it has to do with their sheer numbers. There are nearly 30 million Mexicans in the United States, or people of Mexican origin. That makes it possible for you to live cradle to grave in what is essentially a Mexican environment, Spanish-speaking, with sentiments of loyalty not just to Mexico, but to the state of Mexico from which you came. Likewise, Mexico is just across one little river. People can go back to Mexico and recharge their Mexican loyalty batteries without any trouble at all. In 1998, Mexico made it possible for Mexicans to hold dual citizenship. What they did was try to encourage Mexicans living in the United States to become U.S. citizens and so as to have voting power in the United States, but to maintain their Mexican nationality and their Mexican loyalty. In fact, there have been presidents of Mexico who talk about the fact that the Mexican population of millions stretches into North America, and they consider themselves a kind of North American constituency of Mexico. And at the same time, you cannot overrate the importance among Mexicans of this notion that their land was taken from them illegally back in 1848. This is a constant in the historical education of Mexican children. It is a constant source of resentment, and I think all of these contribute to a kind of separatist, a Mexican identity, and at the same time, among other Hispanics, because there is such a powerful Hispanic and Mexican identity here, it encourages a powerful Hispanic identity for those who are Hispanic but not from Mexico.
Mr. Rivera, why is it that the people who are here in this country from Hispanic countries have to be identified as Hispanic American? Why can't they just be Americans?
Yeah, well, I think this is a very important phenomenon to address. I think it happens with every single large immigration movement. It happened with the Irish, Eastern Europeans, earlier in the century, and actually, your caller said his father had immigrated. Well, people who immigrate to the United States and become citizens first regard themselves as Hispanic. However, as the generations progress, they regard themselves as American.
The father immigrated and called himself an American. That's what I'm telling you.
Excuse me?
The father who came from Germany called himself an American as he became a legal citizen of the United States. He didn't call himself a German-American. He called himself an American.
Okay, well, I mean, that's also before they had a lot of the polling status that they had now or the classifications on censuses.
What's that got to do with anything? What I'm asking is if you've come to America, I don't care what country you've come from, and you've come here the right way, the legal way, why can't we all just be Americans?
I mean, I agree. I don't think anybody that comes to this country and becomes a citizen or a legal permanent resident believes that they're not Americans.
Then why do we have to have the Hispanic student organization, sir?
The United States Army at the moment.
Why do we have to have the Hispanic student organization?
An Hispanic student organization because in the 1960s and progressing into today, there are certain elements towards the educational system that prevent people of color from being able to progress. I mean, this is not a new idea. The fact that there is discrimination within our school systems, within high school, collegiate systems, still exists, and have to address it. Mm. And the only way to address that is to make an advocacy organization for the people that are particularly harmed by this.
All right.
And also, when we're talking about this phenomenon of immigration, well, I mean, first off, 60% of Americans believe that there should be an earned path to legalization for people in the United States that have been working here. So, I mean, that's like a little misleading when you say that most Americans don't believe that because they do.
Well, why was there such a response to the Senate in recent weeks, sir, to kill the immigration reform bill that would have done that?
Well, I believe that was a handful of people that were speaking very loudly. And
a handful of people? I heard several members of Congress say that this was the most response they had ever had on any issue.
I mean, I believe that because it's a very divisive issue. However, there is a March 2007 Gallup poll that says 60% of Americans believe in the earning the status of citizenship. The reason that this bill was shouted down, because it was shouted down not only from one but from both sides, because neither side thought it appropriate. People that believed in better immigration, immigration that's more accessible, that's possible in scope, were very upset with the limited status of this bill. And
okay.
Then people that didn't want so much immigration were very upset with it as well. So
yeah.
You got a lot coming from both sides of the aisle. It was a compromise that killed everyone. And that's one of the reasons why it was so shouted down so much
I got to run. All right. That's Jose Rivera. We've also got Jared Taylor. I'll let him respond to that when we come back here as we go to the break. Jose Rivera is president of Yale University's Hispanic Student Organization, and Jared Taylor, website amren.com, is president of New Century Foundation and editor of American Renaissance. We're debating immigration here. Mr. Taylor, you're welcome to respond to anything there that Mr. Rivera said. But I also want to ask you point blank Because I know you have been accused of being a racist, and we've talked to you before. But what you're saying, I think, to a lot of people may hear you say is that you are against even legal Mexican immigration. Is that right?
Well, first of all, people accuse you of racism only when they have run out of an argument, when they have clearly lost an argument. Then they resort to name-calling, and racist is one of the favorite names to call someone if you're losing an argument. What I'm pointing out is that the Hispanic population as a whole, with the statistics it has, for example, that Hispanics are about four times more likely than whites to be in jail for murder, that they are more likely to be on welfare. They are the largest group that's on welfare in this country. Nearly 50% of Hispanics are on welfare. They are three times more likely than whites to drop out of high school and twice as likely as blacks. Hispanics are the population group least likely to graduate from college. Hispanics are also very high in terms of AIDS deaths, tuberculosis deaths. You cannot look at a statistic and find any suggestion that adding more to this population group is going to be a strength for America. We have for decades been fighting poverty, fighting crime, fighting disease. I just don't understand the wisdom of adding to populations in the United States that are high in that respect. It makes no sense to me. No other country would do this. If you had a group that was high crime, high poverty, more likely to be on welfare, drop out, all of these things, the authorities in that country would say, well, no, it just does not make sense to increase that population. Now, all of what I am telling you is very carefully documented in a report on our webpage, which is a portrait of Hispanics. These are all government facts and government statistics. All I'm asking is it reasonable to assume that it's a good idea to add to populations not only that have social problems, but that, as I've pointed out earlier, has a very fierce loyalty to a foreign country that is just on the other side of our border?
Mr. Rivera, your response.
Okay, well, first off, I agree with what Mr. Taylor says in that Hispanic demographics show a lot less strength in education and all these other areas. However, I disagree on his next conclusion from that argument, which is that, well, we shouldn't let them come. That doesn't make any sense to me. To me, I believe that those situations are environmental. To believe that it's some inherent trait of Mexican Americans for some reason, or Mexicans moving to the United States to have less ability in education and things other than that, such as that, just seemed to me to be very, very misleading and false. For example, Robert Sampson, a Harvard professor, did a study on immigration, Hispanic immigration, and found out that first-generation Hispanic immigrants were 45% less likely to commit violence than third-generation Americans. That's when you control for environmental factors, such as economic wealth, all these other sorts of factors. And second off, on the fierce loyalties bit, I disagree with that as well. I mean, I believe every large immigration movement in the history of the United States had a certain amount of cultural identification with some sort of common shared history. I mean, if you go to Milwaukee today, you still see the remnants of a German, and they're still remaining strong influence of German and Polish immigrant populations. I don't think that there's anything wrong with this, and it's never shown that it's resulted in a failure to assimilate. Hispanic immigrants in the United States are learning English faster than any immigration group in the history of the United States ever has. It only takes one generation for the large majority of immigrants to learn English. I don't think that there's anything that's unsuitable for immigration when it comes to Mexican immigrants.
Then okay, then let's go back two generations ago. You certainly didn't have any time you called a call center, picked up some instructions, press one for Spanish, press two. You know, why do we have that in this country today, gentlemen? Because from what you're saying, Mr. Rivera, if we've got second generation immigrants here from Mexico, they should have already learned how to speak English but apparently they're not. And we're bending over backwards in this country to make it to where we have to speak their language. Now, the same wouldn't be true if we went to somewhere in Mexico. We would have to learn how to speak Spanish.
Well, I mean, that's a little misleading, too, because there are a large population of Americans living in Mexico, and a large portion of them do not learn Spanish. The point is that the consumer industry today is a lot different than it used to be. Back then, people were just either learned English and did this, and everything would be in English, and they'd do it. But the thing is, the people who are not able to speak English are newly arrived immigrants, although they do try to learn English as best they can during their time here while working. And these other like services, such as press 1 for English or 2 for Spanish or any other sort of combination of that, are for those people that come to the United States as immigrants. And there are a large portion of them. There are a large amount of first-generation people that just came to the United States as immigrants who are unable to speak English yet.
Mr. Taylor.
And that's the reason why you have
to go to Mr.
Options.
Taylor now on this.
It's basically consumer service that's just more amenable.
Let me go to Mr. Taylor on this issue now. Go ahead, sir.
Well, at this point, in school districts all across the country, the taxpayers are paying up to $2,000 per student per year more to educate Spanish-speaking students who do not speak English. Mr. Rivera has pointed out that there are environmental reasons why Hispanics are more likely to be poor, more likely to commit crimes. I don't care what the reasons are. The point is that is something that persists in many cases for generations. Even third-generation Hispanics are twice as likely and slightly more likely than blacks to drop out of high school. Third generation. Why is that? At the same time, many Mexicans who come here clearly do so strictly for economic reasons. They send remittances back to Mexico. In 2005, they sent $20 billion to Mexico. This is the largest source of foreign exchange for Mexico, only other than exporting oil. And they often, another aspect of Hispanics that's frequently pointed out is that they tend not to have health insurance. They're 3.5 times less likely to have health insurance than other Americans. Well, why is that? Partly it's because they're sending $20 billion out of our economy back to the economy where their economic and political and social and cultural loyalties lie. $20 billion buys an awful lot of health insurance. The reason they haven't bought it is because they don't consider themselves part of this country. They're sending that money back to Mexico, which is what they consider to be the place where they really belong. And in fact, even when Mexican Americans have become citizens, have lived here for years, every year out of Los Angeles Airport alone, there are several thousand coffins that are flown back to Mexico because even when they die, Mexicans want to be buried in the nation that they consider their true homeland.
All right, let me take a break here. We're talking to Jared Taylor from New Century Foundation, amren.com. Jose Rivera, president of Yale University's Hispanic Student Organization. Sir, do you have a website you wanted to give?
Mine?
Yes, Mr. Rivera.
www.yale.edu/mecha.
All right, good deal. All right, we'll take a break and come back. One final segment on our immigration debate here on the Tom Roten Morning Show. In just a moment, it's 8:47. This is News Talk 800 WVHU. I want to talk to these gentlemen as we wrap up here with about 8 minutes to go about illegal immigration's burden on the taxpayer. And I believe that Mr. Taylor's already hit on this in a couple of ways with health care and also crime. But Mr. Rivera, talk about that just a moment, your perspective, because as a person who works, has 4 kids, and has insurance, I still have the burden of paying for illegals that come into this country who have no insurance, who are getting free health care, and that's a burden to all of us.
Yeah, I understand. Thanks for this opportunity, and I understand that concern. However, it's really not one that that you should be worried about.
What
it ends up working out to is most undocumented immigrants, for fear of being turned in, and because they're not accessible to federal programs, end up actually paying more taxes than they actually take in any state fund, in any state or federal funds through education or anything else.
How are they paying taxes when they're being paid under the table?
They actually get them taken out as their payroll taxes because they still get taxes taken off of their paychecks just like every other worker. The point is that most bosses have a don't ask, don't tell kind of policy with undocumented immigration, where if they don't say anything and I don't say anything, then nobody's really going to, then it doesn't really matter.
But it does matter. It's wrong.
Do you not think that's wrong that an employer
would break the law and not do their job to find out if someone is an American citizen?
Well, you know, I prefer a situation in which that we had an actual possible path towards legalization for these people, in which we wouldn't be hurt economically by the loss in immigrants to be able to take the jobs that most Americans do not want.
That's not true because when they have a raid at some of these places and the immigrants are arrested or deported, the next day Americans are there doing those jobs.
See, that's not entirely true, especially in many regions of the country. I mean, actually, in my own home state of Arizona, several companies have gone under since the border started getting far more stringent with the people that could cross it. I mean, a lot of these companies really depend upon this labor. In the aggregate, actually, is found by the Pew Center that and the Cato Institute both have pieces on it. In the aggregate, it causes zero effect on unemployment. Immigration causes zero effect on unemployment. And it's found that the taxes that these people pay actually end up being less than the services that they receive.
I'll let you respond to that. I also want to ask you in the remaining moments, are you okay with Mexicans coming into this country legally?
Well, first of all, on the whole money question, the Center for Immigration Studies, using estimates developed by the National Academy of Sciences, calculated that over a lifetime, the average adult Mexican immigrant will collect $55,200 more in government services than he will pay in taxes. That is $55,200 that the rest of us have to shell out. A North Carolina study that took into consider only education, medicine, and corrections cost found that Hispanics as a group, both legal and illegal, were an annual net cost of $61 million to the state. Every year, $61 million. Any population that causes that kind of financial drain means that we have to carry them around on our backs. As a consequence, I think, first of all, illegals who are here illegally, it's a simple matter, they should be sent home. Furthermore, I think that in terms of legal immigration, it makes sense to look around our country and see who is really contributing. Do we really want groups that are more likely to commit crime, more likely to go on welfare? My answer to that question is obviously not. No other country would operate an immigration policy as a kind of a charity system. So, no, I do not believe that Mexicans as a group are a good population to add to in this country. As I say, there are already 30 million of them here, and I just don't see why we want our country to become increasingly Mexican.
Let's talk about the burden of employment. We mentioned that, but is there, Mr. Taylor, are there jobs that Americans won't do, as President Bush has said?
There are certainly jobs that Americans will not do at the kind of salary that a desperate Mexican with only a third-grade education who's prepared to live 12 to a bedroom is willing to do. We have a kind of a helot class in this country, desperately poor people, who will swing a pick for 8 hours a day for $5 an hour. That is not the kind of economy that Americans really want to live in. They don't want to work for wages like that. If those people were not here, then the cost for that kind of labor would rise, and of course Americans would do it. It's all entirely a question of supply and demand. But as I say, if you have desperately poor people who really don't, who live at a level that most Americans would find unacceptable in terms of crowding, in terms of privacy, who are willing to work at those low rate wages, we are in effect competing with Mexicans with a mentality almost as if they were still in Mexico. And so, no, an American laborer will not compete at that level. But if we pay them American rates and that will permit them to live in the manner that Americans are accustomed to, then of course those jobs will be filled. As I say, it's simply a matter of supply and demand.
Mr. Rivera, you get about 45 seconds here to respond.
All right, thanks. Well, I'm actually going to say that the immigration here is nothing, no different than any immigration in the history of the United States. Mexican-Americans act very similarly when it comes to cultural values, learning English, et cetera. If you remove a population, you do not remove the environmental factors which causes low education, et cetera. In response to economics, I mean, according to Cato Institute, a $155 billion drop in U.S. Gross domestic product would happen if we remove undocumented immigrants. It's impossible to do it because it would cost $260 billion to deport every single illegal immigrant and undocumented immigrant in the country. It's unfeasible, and these people add to our country. We need to figure a way to make sure that they can be involved in the American process.
Mr. Rivera, are you for a border fence?
No, I'm not. I'm for border security, but I'm not for a border fence. I believe it's a wasted expenditure.
Mr. Taylor, you for a border fence?
I'm for any measure that will guarantee the security of our borders, and the fences have worked well so far. The fences have forced people to go in other directions, and they've cut down a considerable amount of illegal immigration.
All right. Jared Taylor, American Renaissance editor and president of New Century Foundation, and Jose Rivera, president of Yale University's Hispanic Student Organization. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thanks, my pleasure. Thank you.